Good morning. This is the first lesson that I've ever given as a married man. And 60 seconds ago, my loving wife leaned over to me and said, "Don't pace." It wasn't that you'll do great. It was stand still. I'll try, honey. I do. Dan and Rita know this at Smart Road. I pace. I don't know why. I just sometimes my mouth doesn't work unless my feet are working as well. So that's just how it goes. Handling finances in a godly way. I've never given a sermon like this, and I don't know that I've heard a whole lot of sermons about this. And I'll be honest, when I opened up the letter that was given to me that this was going to be my topic, my eyes got as big as saucers. I was really excited to talk about this. This is something that I'm really passionate about. This is something that I was going to say I love, but I better not say that because we know that that's the root of things that shouldn't be. But money and finances and how we handle them is something that I take very seriously, something that I consider to be very important, and something that I think we should as well. And as I was putting together my thoughts this morning, I realized that this is a topic that I could probably talk for a couple of hours with no notes. There's a lot that I could say about this. There's a lot within the Bible that the Bible says about this topic. And there's no way that we're going to be able to cover everything that I would like to cover on a subject like this. Money is an incredibly relevant topic. Money is important in some way or another to all of us. Almost everybody looking at me from teenage years on into retirement is money. Money pervades our life. Money is everywhere. It is incredibly powerful and is incredibly consuming. It plays such a role in our lives. It is our means for providing for ourselves and our family. I have nothing physically that didn't come from money. Either my own or someone else's. You think about that. The house that I have, the car that I drive, all the little trinkets and toys that I don't need, everything that we own comes from money. Things that we do, things that we have the ability to do, comes from money. It represents power, it represents status, success, luxury, food, medicine, housing, clothing. It gives us the ability to fly across the country. Have you ever thought about that? If you have enough little pieces of paper in your pocket, you can fly across the country. I mean, that's lunacy in a sense, but it's the world that we live in. This money has power. This money causes struggles at times. This money causes stress. It causes joy. It causes relief. How many tears have been shed over money? Tears of sorrow and tears of relief. We've seen them and perhaps shed them ourselves. You don't know how you're going to make ends meet. You don't know where the next meal is going to come from. And you're on bended knee and you're shedding tears in very weak and very real moments because of what? A lack of money. Or in other times, a generous gift comes in from some area or some source and it's overwhelming and we can be brought to tears. Why? Because we've received this money. Money has a lot to do with a lot of things in our lives, and it's important that we look at it the way that God would have us to look at it. I work at a bank. Some of you may know that, and that may be indirectly why I got this topic. I don't know. It doesn't really matter necessarily. But it's very interesting when you look at somebody's checking accounts. You can find out a lot about a person by looking at their checking account. You don't have to know their age. You don't even have to know where they live. But if you give me 3 months of bank statements on any individual, it's amazing what you can find out about a person. You can find out where they spend a lot of their recreation. You can find out how much money they make. You can find out how much their house payment or their living accommodations are. You can find out how many credit card bills they're paying. You can find out what they do for fun, at least in the past 3 months. What we do with our money is in a lot of ways what we consider to be important. One man contended, and there's no way to necessarily prove this, but one man contended that men and women view money very differently, which would make sense. Men and women view a lot of things very differently, especially in our culture today. And this man contended, and I somewhat agree with it in discussions with other people, I think they agreed with it as well. It said, in our society today, maybe not necessarily in the church, but in our society today, men tend to view money as a measure of success. Men view money as a scorecard, and women tend to view money as security. Women don't necessarily care how big the balance is, as long as it's enough to take care of the needs. And the guys are kind of looking around saying, okay, so what's he got? Where's that? Where am I in the pecking order? And that's a sad state to say about us men. But I've found it to be true in many, many people that I've known. So as we have discussions about money, or as you may have discussions about money within your family, you might keep that in mind a little bit, that men and women tend to fundamentally view finances differently. That's why women tend to be a little bit more conservative with things, and they just want to wrap their arms around it, and men tend to be looking for the bigger, better deal. Well, we can make more money. Let's do this, let's do this, let's do this, and grow to whatever, because to get stuff we don't need, I guess. I don't know where that goes. But there is a different philosophical look oftentimes between men and women. In the New International Version, I have a Strong's New International Concordance, so that's why I'm using that version. In the New International Version, we find the word money, riches, or wealth, or some derivation of that. Rich, riches, richness, wealth, wealthy, wealthiness, something. We find the derivation of money, riches, or wealth 400 times in the Bible. That concept is spoken about 400 times in the Bible. God has no lack of discussion on the matter, and that obviously means to me that there's some importance that should be put on there. When I look at our lives, when I look at us today, and when I look at the things that we have, I've come to the conclusion that we have three primary resources that God has given us. God gives us time, God gives us talents, and God gives us money. When you really look at it, He gives us life, He gives us a number of other blessings, but if you really look at the resources that we have to spend from the cradle to the grave, we have time, we have talents, and we have money. Ephesians 5 and 16 and other verses tell us that we ought to make use of our time, that we ought to redeem the days because they are evil. And the talents are in a number of places that we could talk about, but 1 Peter 4 and 10 and others tell us that we ought to make use of our gifts. God gives us these talents and expects us to use them. So what about money? What are we to do with our money? If you take an average person over an average life, and I don't know what that is, but I'll pretend that I do for this discussion. An average person over an average life, and maybe they work from the age of 20 to 60, so that's 40 years. And let's say they make $30,000 a year, which is an adequate income, but not an overly indulgent income by our standards. $30,000 for 40 years, you'll make $1.2 million in your life. $1.2 million. If you make $50,000 over those 40 years, you'll make $2 million in your life. So in our given lives, we're going to have $1 million plus, maybe $2 million, maybe $3 million. What are we going to do with that money? Well, we are to be good stewards, and there's a number of verses that we can talk to about that. And I've been asked to talk a little bit about the stewardship of our money. I'm not going to take the time to turn over there, but Matthew, the 25th chapter in verses 14 through 30, we have the parable of the talents, or one of the parables of the talents. And it says that God expects us there, indirectly, the lesson there is God expects us to make use of the things that He's given us. And that is talents. It's talking about money there. Even though it's using a word talent, it's talking about money. It was something that was able to earn interest on it and something that was able to be buried. And what? The two that grew those things were commended, and the one who didn't was not. Now, I don't think this parable is exclusive to money, but it is inclusive of money that we ought to do well with the money the Lord has provided us. Proverbs chapter 27, verse 23. You don't have to turn there, but I will read. Proverbs 27 and verse 23 says, "Be diligent to know the state of your flocks and attend to your herds, for riches are not forever." Riches can come and go, so be diligent on what you have. Know your flocks and tend to your herds. So if we take those two passages that we've just looked at or considered, the first thing that I learn is that we are to use our resources well. And the second thing is that we are to tend to what we have. Take care of the things that we have. Don't squander the things we have, and be educated about them. Don't be ignorant about what we have or perhaps what we could do about it. There's a number of, like I said, this topic is mentioned over 400 times in the Bible. And so there's a number of verses that we're not going to take a look at all, but I am going to work through a number of passages that you may jot down. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 8. Is one of the salient passages on this topic, and I will read that. 1 Timothy 5, verse 8. I'm bookmarking, but that didn't help. 1 Timothy 5, verse 8. "But if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever." Okay, here we have a direct commandment that that we are to provide for his own, and especially those of the household, or his household, or the household of God. That is, and I'll say this, I was going to say I'll say this slowly, like you don't have the ability to comprehend if I speak faster, but that is the primary reason for our wealth, to provide for ourselves and provide for our families. And when I say wealth, I don't mean millions of dollars. I'm just saying anything that has any sort of financial implication, our income, our resources. The reason that we have these things is to provide for ourselves and to provide for our family. And that is first and foremost, and we ought to remember that. It's not to show off. It's not to have fun. It's not to live in luxury that we shouldn't have or buy things that we can't afford. That is not why we have wealth, and that is not why we have an income. We have these things to provide for our family. Buying things you can't afford because you want it, it's fun or it looks good, is not good stewardship, and it's not providing for your family. Digging yourself and your family into a financial hole to go on vacation, to buy power tools, to go shopping, or to go to a fancy dinner, again, is not good stewardship, and it's not providing for your family. And I see it happen time and time and time again. And I'm thankful that I don't know the situation of anybody in here, really. I know my situation. But it's just, it's the truth. And I see people do this day in and day out at work, trying to buy things that they have no business buying. Why? Because their neighbor has it. Or why? Because they think it's fun. And they're making their lives down the road so difficult. And that is not why God allows us to have money. And that's not what God wants us to have. And we all know there's these things in our back pockets that are rectangle and they've got Visa and MasterCard on it. I won't say the word credit card, but I'm talking about credit cards. And I understand, and I fully, all too well, understand that life throws us curveballs, and there are situations. So every time we swipe a credit card, I'm not saying it's a sin or that it's an evil transaction or anything of that nature. Quite to the contrary. But when you swipe that thing, think long and hard about it. Racking up debt ties up future paychecks. And if you think about that, racking up debt ties up future paychecks. And what's that doing? That's robbing yourself tomorrow for something today. And if you think about it, we extrapolate this a little bit farther, and we'll get into this in just a moment. It's robbing our ability to be generous in the future for something today. And isn't giving and isn't generosity really where we want to get to? I said the primary thing is to provide for our family, and we know that, but we really want to get to an ability to share our wealth and to be generous, right? And when we're racking up and when we're allocating our future paychecks to these payments that we've got to make, that's denying us the ability to be generous in the future. And when I think about my future, I want to be able to be more generous than I am today, not less. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 28. Paul, writing here to the brethren of Ephesians, says in verse 28, "Let him who stole steal no longer, but rather let him labor, working with his hands what is good." So here he's saying anybody that's a thief or anybody that's stealing, don't let him steal anymore and let him work for himself. Why? "Working with his hands what is good, that he may have something to give him who has need." One of the other reasons that we have an income, one of the other reasons that we have wealth, is to share it, is to be generous. We get things, we have these things, so that we can give to others in need. Which brings me to a bit of a transition out of stewardship, out of taking care of the things that we have, and transitioning into ability to give and share with those that may not. As we talk about the giving that we should do as Christians, Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 9 says, "Honor the Lord with your possessions and your first fruits." Honor the Lord with your first fruits. I think that the first level of giving that we should do is to the Lord. We have an extensive example throughout the Old Testament about giving to the Lord. And I don't see any reason to believe that that's any different in our times now. 1 Chronicles chapter 29, and it's a lengthy passage. It's one of my favorite passages about money. 1 Chronicles chapter 29, David is amassing wealth for the temple. David wanted to build the temple. He wasn't able to, so his son Solomon is going to build it. And so the thing that David can do, since he can't build the temple, is he's like, okay, well, I'll gather up all the provisions that I can for Solomon to build the temple. I'll do what I can. And in verse 29 of 1 Chronicles, David offers a prayer. And in verse 14, he says, he's offering a prayer on behalf of him and the nation of Israel. In verse 14, he says, "But who am I and who are my people that we should be able to offer so willingly as this?" David essentially looks at all the resources that the children of Israel were able to amass, and he says, "Who am I and who are us that we are able to give you back this much stuff?" And when I say give back, because in verse 14 he says, "For all things come from you, and of your own we have given you." David recognizes that those weren't his stuff. That wasn't his stuff to start with. But he was thankful to the Lord that he had the ability to give. When was the last time that you prayed a prayer similar to that? I've thanked God many times for some of the blessings that I have. I thank God for the roof over my head, the meals that I'm able to eat, and things like that. But I should look for opportunities to be giving, and I should thank the Lord for the ability to be generous. I'll briefly touch on it. This is a huge discussion that I won't necessarily take a lot of time on, but just to throw it out there. 10% was an example that was given in the Old Testament with tithing. We know that they gave 10%. And I think that's a real good place for us to start in the New Testament. And that may step on some toes, but I this is my personal conviction of that. I don't see anything to make me believe otherwise. There's types and shadows all throughout the Old Testament. And if in the Old Testament they were told to give 10%, and then in the New Testament we're told to give as we have prospered, I look at my house with electricity and a car and vehicles and all kinds of things, and it's difficult for me to think that I'm less prosperous than those people that were giving 10%. That's a part of my personal conviction. You can make a decision as you think. But I think that's a good place to start. There's numerous verses throughout the New Testament, throughout the Bible, when it talks to giving. I'm not going to take the time to turn to hardly any of them, but Luke chapter 6, verse 30 tells us to give to those who ask. Acts 20 and 35 tells us that it's more blessed to give than receive. Matthew 25, when Christ is talking about separating the goats and the sheep, he says, "Feed the hungry and be hospitable and give them clothing." 1 John 3, 17, I will take a moment to consider. 1 John chapter 3, verse 17. "But whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him?" So here it's saying whoever has goods and sees a brother in need and doesn't give it to him, shame on them, basically. How does the love of God abide in them? But notice the phrasing in there. It says, whoever sees his brother in need, and then what does he do? Shuts up his heart against him. It doesn't say whoever sees his brother in need and doesn't give. Why? Because our desire and our willingness, and whether or not we do or don't give, in my estimation, is a direct reflection of where our heart is. If our heart is right, we will be generous. And if our heart is not, then it can be very difficult for us to be. And I stand before you today as fully admitting that there's been times in my life that that's ebbed and flowed. And there's been times that I've been far more selfish than I should have. I'm not up here wagging fingers, but I'm up here speaking the truth in the scriptures that I understand. And if we find it difficult to be generous, then we should probably examine our hearts. So if we are to be good stewards and we are to be giving, we understand that. And we've probably heard lessons somewhat about that. You know, if we're going to talk about godly finances, we should be good stewards of what we have and we should be generous. So everybody in here is a perfect steward and perfectly generous, right? Simple as that. It seems simple, right? If these are the two things that we're supposed to do, then let's just go out and do it. Well, sometimes the rubber meets the road and things become a little bit more difficult. So why don't we always do it? If we can all agree, and I see heads nodding, that giving is a good thing, why don't we always give as we should? If we all know that good stewardship is a good thing, then why don't we always do it? Well, when we take a look at money, there's two great temptations in my estimation, and that is one of greed or selfishness, and then the other is being wasteful or just frivolous with our finances. Why aren't we good stewards? Well, the number one reason may be because we lack discipline or that we don't see the value in it. I'm doing fine, I'll never be rich, so I'll just keep muddling along the way that I'm muddling. Perhaps we don't have a plan. Why aren't we more giving? Well, frankly, one might be that we're just too selfish and that, you know, we need to examine ourselves on that. But another thing is that we might be in some more financial strain than others. And we might convince ourselves, either rightly or intentionally or unintentionally, that at this time, at this moment in my situation, I need to hold on to the things that I have. I'm not able to be generous right now. Later, when the worm turns, then I'll be more generous. But right now, I'm in protection mode. I need to gather things up. And I've been there. I've been there. When I was in college, an older brother, I never asked him, but when I was in college, I did not regularly contribute to the collection. And there was an older brother at Smart Road that I think noticed that. And he never said anything to me direct. Well, he did at this time. But we were having a conversation. He didn't come up and wag his fingers. And he didn't even acknowledge that, hey, I've noticed that you haven't done it. So maybe this was just my own guilty conscience thinking that he had seen this. But he did make a statement to me. And he said, Shane, I just want you to know that you can be just as generous now as any other time in your life. And that really hit home. Because that makes you think of the woman and the two mites, right? How much we have does not impact how generous we can be. And I've never forgot that. And I should go back and ask him. I would guess that he doesn't remember that conversation. It's one of those conversations that, you know, resonates more with one person maybe than the other. Maybe I'll do that next Sunday. Make a note of that. Don't follow up with me and see if I ask. But I really appreciated that. And that was some 20 years ago, close to 20 years ago. And I still remember that comment. And I've carried it with me. You can be just as generous now as you can at any other time in your life. And frankly, if we're honest, we should be. If you don't make enough to be giving, that may be true. But let's look at what's in your closet. Let's look at what we have. And let's look at what we're trying to hold on to and see what we're cutting out. There's been times in my life where I almost lost my job. It was 6 months after I purchased a house, and I could see it coming. There was down cuts in the department, and I was like, oh, this isn't good. Just bought the house, my brand new house, first house, and I could see the writing. I mean, it was a train coming. I could see it, and I'm like, this is going to be bad. I was losing sleep. I was literally selling stuff out of the basement because I was in stockpile mode. I want to build up some cash because I don't know what the next 6 months are going to look like. And as I was putting together this lesson and thinking about that story, if you think about it, I was fighting tooth and nail to hold on to this house to the point that I suspended my contribution to the Lord for a while. Think about that. God, I don't know, I can't give to you because I've got this house and it's important. That's backwards. And that's a real life story of mine, and we may have similar things. If we can't find the ability to be generous, then we may need to reevaluate what it is that we're fighting for, what it is that we're trying to hold out, and let's take a look at our checkbook and see where our money's going. Because I think we can probably all be generous at various capacities. And I'm not trying to downplay real financial struggles, so I understand that. But I'm just speaking from my own personal experience. We can turn to a number of verses. Matthew chapter 6, verses 25 and 26 talks about how the Lord will provide. The Lord will provide and the Lord will give us enough. Some of the problem is what we think is enough and what God thinks is enough might not always match up. Hebrews 13 and 5 tells us to not covet and to be content and that the Lord will not leave us. So philosophically, that's kind of an overview of some of the things that I wanted to say. I've got a couple of comments on some maybe more practical rubber meets the road type of topics. I wasn't asked specifically to talk on these, but as we talk about godly finances and I have discussions with people, these are things that come up. In Luke chapter 12, verses 16 to 21, we have a fairly famous verse, fairly famous passage. I'm not going to turn there, but it's a story about how a farmer who has an incredibly good crop and he has such a harvest that he has barns that he can't store it all in. And so he makes the decision to tear down his barns because his existing barns were already full and fills them up. And then he ends up passing away that evening and is considered a fool for his decision. And I've had people ask me the question, or I've seen the question raised is, well, does that mean that we shouldn't save for retirement? Does that mean that we shouldn't store money away for down the road? Because this gentleman was condemned for that. Well, I don't believe that to be true, and there's a couple of reasons for that. This story was told a couple of verses after a gentleman came and said, asked Christ to, he was fighting with his brother over his inheritance. I should have just turned there. I'm paraphrasing this so poorly. But he went to Christ and said, make my brother share the inheritance with me. And so this was told in response to a very greedy statement. This was not told in response to a person who was trying to provide for his family or think about his financial well-being for the future. It was told about a person who was fighting with his brother over a lump sum of money. And so that's part of what I think about. And it also, I get the impression that it was coming from a person who may have not been incredibly generous, but was just looking to get his arms on some wealth. If you look at the story, we have an individual that doesn't appear to be of any sort of retirement age, but that he just has this huge windfall of money. And so what's he do? He could be 35, 40 years old, takes this money and says, I'm just going to kick my feet up, eat, drink, and be merry for the rest of his life. And I don't think that's what the Lord would have us to do. But I think that's different than being generous over a whole lifetime and also setting some money aside for retirement. I don't know if anybody has any other thoughts on that, but I've heard that, and those are my personal thoughts on that topic. Romans 13:8 also says, owe no man anything except to love. And I've heard the thought that we ought not to go into any sort of debt, that we are to owe no man anything. I personally don't take that point of view. I work at a bank. That wasn't in my notes. That just popped into my head. I personally don't take that point of view. And the reason for that is we look in the previous verse, it talks about rendering taxes that are owed. I mean, that's money that is owed. I take that to mean that don't owe anybody any more that's outside of your agreement. Don't be past due on any payments. Don't break your agreements. If you sign a contract, don't be indebted to them outside of what's in the contract. Now, after saying that, I think this world and this country and everybody that exists would be a whole lot better off to not be in debt than to be in debt. We are in a debt-happy society that's scary and sickening to levels that are scary and sickening. But I don't know, personally, I don't believe that that's necessarily a commandment from the New Testament. My thoughts, my beliefs. There's a number of warnings throughout the Bible about the riches or the perils of riches or the perils of money. I'm not going to take time to read an exhaustive list, but Ecclesiastes 5:10 tells us that those who love money are never satisfied. The love of money is an endless game. Talk about a hamster on a wheel. You cannot get there. There's been two times in my career that I've thought, okay, if I could just make this much money, I'll be cooking. You know, it's like I'm struggling a little bit now, or whatever struggling was. It's like, you know, I'm making it now, but if I could just get to this point now, I'll be in business. I've hit both of those milestones, and honestly, I don't feel that much different. You never get there. The milestone just keeps going out and just keeps going out. I love that verse, Ecclesiastes 5:10. Those who love money are never satisfied. Matthew 6:24 talks about how we can't serve two masters. We're familiar with that. 1 Timothy 6:10 tells us that the love of money is the root of all evil. 1 Timothy 6:17 and 19 talks about how the rich shouldn't be arrogant. The rich should not be arrogant. But put our hope in God. It's easy to become arrogant when you have some financial success. It's easy to become arrogant when you have some financial security because your stress level is down and you feel like you're making it. You feel like everything is okay. But we ought not to do that. As I draw things to a close, I'd like to turn to, please turn with me over to Luke chapter 3. And this isn't a normal verse that someone might turn to when we're talking about our finances. But Luke chapter 3, starting in verse 7, we've got a situation here where John the Baptizer is out speaking to a multitude and he chastises some of the religious leader. In Luke chapter 3, verse 7, he calls them a brood of vipers. And then in verse 8, he makes the statement at the beginning of verse 8, therefore bear fruits worthy of repentance. So he starts talking to them about bearing good fruits. Verse 9, he talks to what happens to those people that do not bear good fruit. It says an axe is taken to the root. So he comes in, he chastises the leaders, and he says, people, you need to bear good fruits. If you don't bear good fruits, an axe is going to come to you, and you're going to be chopped off. So they pose the question in verse 10, what shall we do then? What is it that we should do? His response, verse 11, he who has two tunics, let him give to him who has none. In verse 12, the tax collectors who come and are being baptized said, teacher, what shall we do? And in verse 13, he says, collect no more than what is appointed to you. Verse 14, the soldiers say, what shall we do? He says, don't intimidate, accuse falsely, and be content with your wages. They did not ask him a financial question. He says, bear fruit. And they say, okay, how do we do that? And he says, share your tunic. And the tax collectors say, how do you do that? And he says, don't be dishonest when you collect your wages. And the soldiers come and they say, how do we do that? And he says a couple of other things, but one of the things he says is be content with your money. John the Baptizer is saying bearing good fruits is being generous, not being dishonest in business, and being content with our money. I find that incredibly powerful. And I think that we should really take a look at how we view our finances. It's a direct correlation to what John the Baptizer is saying are bearing good fruits. I believe God gives us time to see how we will redeem it. I believe God gives us talents to see how we will use them. And I believe God gives us money to see how we will spend it. How do you spend your money? How will you spend your money? Money is not evil. Money is not evil. Money is not good. Money has no thoughts. Money has no feelings. Money doesn't care. Money doesn't care. Money does exactly what we tell it to. Money does exactly what we tell it to. And most of us over our lives are going to have quite a bit of money flow through our checking accounts, flow through our fingers, flow through our pocketbooks. How will we spend our money?